Our scripture this morning is from the Gospel of Matthew, the 14th chapter. At that time, Herod, the ruler, heard reports about Jesus, and he said to his servants, "This is John the Baptist. He has been raised from the dead, and for this reason these powers are at work in him." For Herod had arrested John, bound him, and put him in prison on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because John had been telling him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Though Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before the company, and she pleased Herod so much that he promised on oath to grant her whatever she might ask. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me the head of John the Baptist here on a platter." The king was grieved, yet out of regard for his oaths and for the guests, he commanded it to be given. He sent and had John beheaded in the prison. The head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, who brought it to her mother. His disciples came and took the body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish." And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds, and all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides the women and children. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now you could imagine how all the disciples and Jesus felt with the grisly death of John the Baptist. He was one of theirs. He was Jesus' cousin. And many of them, including Jesus, had been baptized by John. And it was the beginning of the change, the revolutionary change that was to come with Jesus that really did change the world as we know it forever. Was the beginning of that change, and he was one of their friends, one of their compatriots, one of their leaders. And for him to meet such a grisly end at the hands of the corrupt leader Herod had to just send a shockwave through all of them. And Jesus immediately tries to go off alone somewhere, it would seem, reading between the lines, to just get his mind around what has gone on and to grieve and to petition God and to steel himself for what was to come next. Perhaps had the wind knocked out of his sails briefly. Certainly that could be said for the disciples. He knew what he was about, and he knew he would meet a grisly end as well. It must have been very difficult for Jesus to hear this news of his cousin. And so he tries to retreat and go off, but all the people follow, and they have needs. And so, as is always the case with Jesus, their needs take precedent over his need for quiet time. He heals them. He feeds them miraculously. He gives them what they need in a trying time. He gives them what they need. Wonderful, wonderful story. And a wonderful analogy for the church today. Look around you right now. Look around the pews. See all the empty spaces? It's summertime, yes. But our attendance has been lower than it's been in quite a while. And it's been the same in a lot of other churches too these days. There aren't as many people going to church anymore. And I went away on vacation with that on my mind, thinking, how do we get people to come back? Now, it's not about backsides in the pews and counting numbers. It's about having this wonderful story to tell and this wonderful experience, and how much better the story is told and how much more full the experience when everybody is sharing it, when more people come. So I went off on vacation, and our first stop was Montreal, Quebec. And if you look at the front of your bulletin, you'll see this is a towering brass sculpture. It has to be easily as high as our ceiling here. It's in the Basilica of Notre Dame in the old section of Montreal. This is not the main sanctuary. This is the chapel. And we were there, Teresa and I, and we toured the main sanctuary, which you could fit probably six of our church into, and it was stunning and beautiful. And we decided to come back the next day for Mass. And so we did, and they said it's not in the main sanctuary. It's around behind the sanctuary in the chapel. So I'm walking back there thinking, okay, they'll have a nice little place where we'll sit for a Saturday noon or a Friday noontime Mass. And so I walk around and walk in this door and have met with this huge, beautiful sculpture, and it's all in brass, and it was, Montreal is such an artistic city anyway, and it was done by a fairly modern sculptor, and it is all about the faith, and there's a dove descending from the top, and Jesus' head is the head of the dove, which is kind of disconcerting at first when you look at it, and underneath are people asking for and receiving help from God, from Jesus, and from each other. And it all winds together into this beautiful mosaic of the experience of faith. And so on the first Friday of my vacation, I'm met with this beautiful sculpture, and I just stood there gawking. But then Mass was beginning. Of course, it's a Roman Catholic Mass, and I've attended a lot of Roman Catholic Masses, but never one in French. And so I sat there. Now, there's this affliction for pastors. It's a regrettable thing. It's this affliction when you try to sit and worship in church. You're comparing yourself and what you do to everything that they do. And you hear a sermon, you think about the last eight times you preached on that particular passage, and, that's a little different than I would have done, and you steal the good ideas, and in your brain you criticize the ideas you think are not so good. It's almost impossible for a pastor to sit in worship in a church and truly sit in worship. But I couldn't understand a word that was being said. So I couldn't criticize anything. All I could do was sit there in the presence of God with 9 or 10 other faithful people, all speaking in French in response to what the priest was saying, and follow the rhythm and the cadence of the worship without knowing the precise words. It made me think of those people in the Roman Catholic Church who missed the Latin Mass, because I really saw the beauty. I felt the presence of God, and I had to turn off everything else in my brain and just be there in that moment with those people I didn't know, and with that priest with his mellifluous voice, and all of the beauty around us. It was a wonderful moment for me. And it made me think about what we do every Sunday here and why we do it. Why do we worship? Well, the word worship comes in a few different forms in Greek and Hebrew, but there's an element of humble in it, humility in it. In fact, one of the Greek terms is toward humility in English. We move toward something greater than us. We acknowledge it. We let it wash over us. And somehow, this builds us up and helps us to go on. Now, every person in these pews here has a slightly different relationship with that which they call God. Every single person here has a different experience with Jesus. Every single person here has a slightly different opinion about Christianity, about God, about a faithful life. The one constant for all of us is the fact of God. And that's where I arrived at there with those few people who were worshiping and that wonderful language I didn't understand. I arrived at the fact that I was there in the reality of God, whether I could understand it or not. And it made me think, Corey, how often do you truly understand what God is up to in your life? How often do you really understand the language God is speaking to you? How often do you misinterpret and miss what God is saying to you? And yet, God continues to speak. And God continues to stir my heart. And I continue to come to church and learn and grow in love, in peace, in conviction. Montreal is in Quebec province, of course, the one French-speaking province of Canada, and regularly they consider separating out and becoming their own country. And Quebec was really grown by Catholic missionaries, especially nuns, especially women. And one of the touching things about being in this cathedral of Notre Dame was along the walls in the main sanctuary were these wonderful murals, and some of them were of the sisters and the work they did in particular with the Indians, with the native populations that they encountered. And this was in particular importance because I was standing next to a lady whose great-grandmother was a pure-blooded Indian who had been raised in an orphanage by those very sisters. Teresa had, in her past, her great-great-grandmother. And on those walls, those beautiful pictures of what they did with the God they followed. There's pictures of them feeding people and reaching out to the poor and teaching the native population. And we went on to Quebec City, which was also mostly produced by Catholicism. And they had more beautiful cathedrals. And it was Sunday morning when we got there. And I saw this beautiful cathedral in the center of Quebec City. And I heard the bells ring for worship. And I saw fewer than 15 people walk in. Beautiful buildings, wonderful, wonderful lineage, and no one is showing up. In fact, while 39% of Americans regularly attend church, somewhere between 8 and 15% of the Quebecois attend church. Now, there's a reason for this. The church got all wrapped up in politics, and the government was quite corrupt, and the way corruption works is it stains everything, including the church. And it got to the point where they had in Quebec what was called the Quiet Revolution, where they tried to set things right and tried to end corruption, and one of the casualties was church attendance, was faith. And this had me thinking too. I did a lot of thinking while I was gone. This had me thinking how we can harm the cause of our God by what we do and say inside these walls and outside them in the name of Christ. And I thought to myself, how do we safeguard against that very danger? Because you see it happening somewhat in our country too. A lot of people walking away from the faith. And the reason they give is it's just not relevant because we've stood on the sidelines for several of the most important initiatives in the growth of our country. They say it doesn't pertain to me because there aren't people showing them how God does not just pertain to them, but weave completely through their lives. And I thought, how can that happen? And all I could come up with is that maybe worship is the answer toward humbleness, toward humility. And I thought about this church here and the experience you have when you come in and how crazy it is sometimes and how loud we get sometimes and how busy it gets sometimes. And I thought to myself, how many of the people who walk in here get a moment like I got in the Basilica of Notre Dame of silence, profound quiet, and restoration? And I thought, how many of the people who come here to church come here despite some controversy we've been through, and how many feel a burden in their life that is not being solved, that is not even being addressed by their God? And I thought to myself, am I up to that challenge? Am I really being a pastor? Are the people who gather here in faith worshiping in a way that is meaningful to them and encountering God in a way that carries throughout their lives? And I thought to myself, self, enjoy your cruise. Because when you get back, you're going to need to ask everybody that question. Why do we worship? Why do we come together? And why are so many people walking away from it? Now, I know for me, in my strange relationship with my God, that there are times when it's easy. There are times when it's obvious that God is moving in my life. And there are times that are difficult, and there are times that I can't see what God is up to. There are times I even doubt whether God even cares what I'm up to. And what I think I'm learning is, as a pastor, the dangerous times for me are the easy times. The dangerous times for me are the times when I can take it for granted, or I can try to protect the good feeling instead of make the sacrifice. And I think of that brass that I saw behind the altar in that chapel, and how the artist was not afraid to show hunger and anguish and hurt and struggle, and was not afraid to show that Jesus didn't float up there somewhere where everything was blue sky and wonderful, but was always coming down where it was tough and asking the tough questions and doing the tough tasks. Eight to 15% of Quebec citizens attend church regularly. Somewhere around 39% of Americans attend worship in some form regularly. And that's not just Christian, but all the different faiths. And 100% of Quebec and Quebecois and 100% of Americans need God in their life. So here's what I want to do. I want to take some time as a congregation to really think about God in our lives. And for me, the best way I see God moving in our lives is by looking at you and seeing what you're up against and what you're moving through, where you've been and where you've going, and how God has hit you at each of those points and touched your lives. I want to take some time to regroup with that idea. I want to take some time to talk to the people who used to come here and don't anymore. Because I know what coming to worship does in my life. And I remember what it used to do in theirs. And I'm wondering, did we become irrelevant? Did we step away from something important in their life that they didn't find answers for here or comfort for here. And I want all of us to ask those questions and listen honestly to the answers we get. You know, I was away from the internet and I was away from the news for 2 weeks. Oh, that was wonderful. And I came back to find a federal government that's still not sure they're going to pay their bill. And to the same hatred and confusion among people that I left, and cruel, nasty words, and the same distracted media and distracted populace. And I thought, we already have the answer. We already have the solution. Why? Why is it not being implemented? Why do we worship? We worship because God is a reality, right? That's why I worship. I'll tell you why I worship. I worship because God is a reality in my life. And this God who is a reality in my life, I am very grateful to for many, many things. And this God who is a reality in my life, I sometimes see moving in amazing ways in the world. And this God who moves in amazing ways in the world, I see little pockets where this God is not allowed in. I see people who I know who are resistant to that love and that change in life that can only come from the ultimate love we get from God. I worship because I need to be reminded that I'm not in charge. I worship because I need to be more humble than I am, and trust me, that's a struggle for me. I need to know and recognize God moving in my life. I need to know and recognize God moving in the lives of my family and friends and strangers I've never met before. I worship because I have to. Not out of obligation, but I'm just driven to it. And when I go too long without it, I'm hollow. And I'm not the same person I used to be. I'm not the person I want to be. I'm not the person God made me to be. I worship because that's how I'm built by God. I worship here because I need all of you. I need to hear your stories. I need to hear your encouragement. I need to hear your criticism. I need to be accountable to other people. And I need the evidence that you bring of goodness and mercy and love. I worship here because there's something in the power of a group of people getting together and praising God. And that energy that moves through us is beyond anything we can create on our own. And in this world, this beautiful, tragic world, we need that energy. We need that power. We need that guidance. We need that humility. To sit in a beautiful sanctuary and not know a thing that's being said, but still be filled with love and wonder and grace. That can only happen through God. To sit at home and not be a part of that which you are built for. That to me is really sad. So, why do you worship? figure it out for yourself. And then let's share with those who are missing, those who are missing out, those who need that love and energy and passion and accountability in their lives. And they don't have to come here. But let's help them to get somewhere where they can encounter it. Amen. Amen.